You are listening to Journeys on Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com and simulcast with wolfspiritradio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth. Good afternoon. This is now the 2nd of June, 2013. Is this the 2nd of June? Still the 2nd of June? No, it's the 3rd of June. Wow, that has really whacked by. So, yes, it's the 3rd of June, 2013, and this is Journeys with JP, and it's been a lovely sunny day here, and I've been just hanging out in the garden on Monday. I discovered that Monday was the day when I had to do my own things, my own day. Monday. So it's a sort of day off from doing things for other people. And, you know, it's my service to self day, I think. That's one. So what did I do in my service to self day? I got my glue gun and some bamboo sticks about, what are they, about 18 inches long. And made a Merkaba to hang it up in my tree, about 3 feet on a side, quite a big thing, but made of little bamboo canes and glue gun. And then I thought I'd get a bit more progressive, so I made this geodesic figure with triangles and pentagons, and it's sort of hanging on the tree like some sort of limp bauble. It doesn't quite kind of have that structure that holds itself together like the Merkaba does, so it's a bit floppy and weak, I must say. It hasn't locked itself in like some sort of you know, one of these crystalline things. Anyway, so that's where I've been this afternoon. I hope everybody's happy and having a very interesting time. Everybody's watching the Turkish Revolution and making sure that everybody knows about it, and this sounds like it. This sounds like the one they didn't want us to know about. So this is obviously the one to spread around. So go Turkey. My guest tonight is a dear friend of mine. He's probably the tallest man I know to speak to. And not that I've ever actually stood next to him. I can only imagine what it must be like. You'd have a real, real difficulty in my house. I have a doorway in my kitchen. This is such an old cottage. I have a doorway in my kitchen, which is, I think, 5'9.5" high. And, my 6 foot friends all bang their heads into it. So I'm getting some neoprene, to stick on the, doorways, because too many people have clung their head really rather hard, and neoprene will at least buffer the shock a little bit. Anyway, so without further ado, Thomas, are you with me?
Yes, I am.
Greetings, Osio.
Osio. I'm hanging in there.
Yes. Monday. Yeah, so how's your Monday been?
Well, it's been like, I would say it's been like any other Monday, but it's been rather physically taxing with me having to leave the house and take care of some things, and I'm dealing with the brown recluse spider bite on my ankle, and so just about, I'm over the hump on that at least, so my foot's back to normal size. It's not swollen or hurting as bad as it was.
They are mean mothers, aren't they?
You know, I was asleep and I woke up and my ankle had a burning spot on it. I scratched it. It quit burning for a little bit. and I went back to sleep, and when I woke up, the flesh was coming off, and stuff was seeping out of it, and I was like, uh-oh.
Oh,
I wonder what this is. You know, I haven't been to a doctor or the hospital, but I can tell you what pulled the spider bite out, the neurotoxins. And it was a bit painful, I will say, but a slice of lemon, I kept it on the bite area, and that hardened flesh from the neurotoxin from the spider, it eventually came out, and it was not pretty. But now I'm just keeping it packed with activated charcoal and aspirin to help with the pain a little bit, because it's still discomforting, but it's not the whole foot. It's just the place where I was bit at. Wow. So I'm over the hump.
Wow, Thomas. That's mean. And you have enough trouble walking around anyway.
Yeah, I know.
So, very sorry to hear that, friend.
Yeah, I just look at it as a character-building experience and just wait till I write my book.
That's right. How I Survived the Brown Recluse Spider.
And the Sasquatch and the lightning strike and everything else that's happened to me in this life.
Oh, but let's not go into any victim consciousness. It's not like, you know, it's not like somebody's doing this to you.
No, no. Character building experience.
So it's good. It's good to speak to you. I haven't heard from you for a while, obviously, because you've been, how long have you been off with this bite?
Oh, just a couple of weeks I've had this bite, but I retired from Wolfsbait Radio as a show host back on January 20th is when I retired. So.
Yes, yeah. And I was thinking about the old Buffalo Talk days the other day, you know, and how you kind of connected us with Kanikanip and with Gerald and with Two Dog and... You know, all these wonderful people, that, they've gone on to have their solo careers, as it were, you know what I mean?
Pretty much, yeah.
So, I just want to give you the nod and the kudos for being responsible for all these people.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, because I mean, we know what we're supposed to be doing, but we don't know exactly what we're supposed to be doing, and it just kind of comes to us, and it all kind of falls into place. And you have an idea of what you're supposed to be doing, but it doesn't happen like, you know, you're planning it, because it's spirit brings you the people, and spirit brings people together, and. You're just listening to what the spirit is saying, or urging towards, do you think?
Well, to speak on that, in January, I was considering retiring. I retired from running the switchboard on a Blog Talk Radio show that I was assisting someone with, a few days before. And then I was reluctant to retire from Wolfsbait Radio. And then I heard Rebecca Jernigan was retiring, and I'm like, well, there's the event that I'm looking for, because I was waiting to see. And that was confirmation for me that it was time to retire. So January 20th was the last show I did. And I knew that things were about to come into my life that would keep me too busy to host a radio show anymore. So, what I can say about that is that life has been busier over the last 5 months than it was all of last year. And it's tumultuous. I'll use that word, if I may. Tumultuous to try and keep up with everything that's going on. Sometimes I have to look at my driver's license just to see what my name is in this reality. How's that for an answer?
So things have got busy. So I hope this is good and you know, useful busy rather than just pain in the posterior busy.
It's, like I said, tumultuous is the word I would use. Daunting, that's another word I can use for that. I recently had contact with this fellow, and I'm putting his YouTube channel in the Skype chat there, if you'd like to give that to people. And he's been dealing with the Sasquatch people in Canada for a little over 7 months now, 8 months, something like that, directly. And that communication was very interesting. I spent a little over 3 hours on Skype with him and his woman, answering questions to them that I hope I answered adequately. I don't know if anybody else has been able to talk with him that interacts with Sasquatch quite the way I do. But I did answer a lot of questions for him that he was confused about. So please give that link to people in the show so that they can go and explore those videos. There's audio recordings. He's received gifts or peace offerings in the forms of weavings. One of his videos is called The Apes Don't Weave, which is very appropriately titled.
So, apes don't weave.
Apes don't weave, and he's received several weavings from them. When he leaves stuff out, they bring gifts to him as well.
All right, hang on. I can see you've got a terrible crackling now.
Yeah, no, the headset decided to shift in its position on the computer, so I had to realign it. I hope that's a little better.
Yeah, you're good. Still sounding good. I thought H dump. A stump, you're saying. Something on a stump.
A stump? Stop it. Okay, I'm on the show. You're not on the show. Just cut it out.
You are talking to the dog.
Yes, I am. My ankle biter is about 18 pounds. She is half Cocker Spaniel, half Red Terrier. And she does the perfect imitation of Snoopy when he's standing there doing the vulture or condor pose in the cartoons.
So, he says, you got loads of dogs, though, haven't you? You got a Catahoula?
Catahoulas is the name of them. And for nobody that's ever heard of them, you can just put in Catahoula pictures in Google and you'll see a lot of pictures. But
spell it.
Catahoula. It sounds like a Hawaiian word. If you don't stop, I'm going to have to really mute my microphone just so I can get a hold of you, okay? So they are an Indian dog. Because when the Spaniards came in the 1500s, they brought bull mastiffs and greyhounds with them, and they left their sick and lame dogs behind. And, of course, the Choctaw and Chickasaw and Cherokee took those dogs in. And they had red wolves as companions. They didn't call them pets. They called them companions. And so those three breeds got together and started making a new type of canine. And then, of course, the French came to Louisiana in the 1700s. And they brought the Beauchiron hound, and you can look that up. That's Beauceron, Beauchiron, and that got introduced. So you've got at least 300 years of those four breeds coming together and making the Catahoula. And so my female is almost a perfect combination, looking at her, between the Bull Mastiff and the Greyhound. And my boy Catahoula is so red wolf, it's not even funny. He's got the coloring of a Beauchiron hound on his head and his back, but he has the red legs and two very golden eyes, just like a red wolf would have. And he can't bark. All he can do is make a sick howl when he tries to bark, and it's rawr, 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 rawr. That's all he can do. He can't bark. Sorry.
Poor thing. Good thing. Well, you know, I think the bark is just one thing that dogs communicate on. But I think they communicate on this, that kind of, I can't even do it, the kind of squeaking sound that they make. But also there's these other, it sounds like Muttley, you know, right?
Yes, yes.
I believe that contains communication, that's high frequency data transfer, somehow. That's my belief, anyway. What do you think?
The dog behind me, when Dale lived here, he used to laugh at me because I would hear that dog barking over there, and I said, yeah, somebody's going by the house, that's why that dog is barking that way. Do you not hear what the dog is saying? It's saying, stop, whoa, 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 stop, whoa, 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 whoa. That's what it was saying when it was barking, and I could clearly hear it, and that's all I could say to whoever was walking past or going past the house. He was saying, stop, whoa, 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 whoa. So, I hear dogs speak at times, and it gets very interesting trying to communicate with them. And I'm going to shut up now.
No, that's quite interesting, because my girlfriend's dog, which is a husky, regular listeners to my Revolution Radio show will remember my utter panic. Having had the dog dumped on me that morning, I was having a weird time of it trying to deal with this dog that I didn't know how to speak to, and I didn't understand. We did eventually establish a conversation, but as a husky, this creature is not like a dog, not like a dog at all, and he's very smart. And very canny and very dogged, you know. they do have that, very dogged. But he would talk, and he would talk in long sentences. You know, he was... And at one morning, it totally freaked me out. So I was kind of just... I just woken up by this sound. This sound to me sounded like my mother-in-law. Now, my mother-in-law is a very kind of cut-glass English accent lady. And when she says hello, she says, hello, like the Queen, you know, she speaks like the Queen. And I thought that she was somehow in my house because this dog made that sound. Hello! Woke me up, freaked me out. What? Yeah, as you do. Duh. Yeah, and I really that was quite a fun thing, but he just didn't stop talking, you know. And, you know, like with anybody who doesn't stop talking, the charm wears off after a minute or so.
Yes, I completely understand. And it's one of those things where most people aren't prepared for. They tend to ignore it at times. But, I never have quite had the luxury of ignoring that kind of stuff, especially when the dog keeps bothering you all the time.
So, one of the reasons that I bring this up is your experience at communicating with not only furry two legs, but furry four legs as well. And presumably you got a bit of ground to cover with the eight legs so far. Yes, you can ask questions, of course. So the question is, you know, how have you been gaining in sensitivity over the last few months? Because, for one, myself, I've been getting more and more sensitive, and I'm like talking to trees and listening to what they're saying, and talking to blades of grass and stuff like that. So if I've become that much more sensitive, and I knew you used to have a great deal of sensitivity, has it increased for you, Thomas?
In some directions, yes, it has. but I try and stay on point or on focus with what I have left. And right now my focus is working with people that are having direct interactions with the Sasquatch people. And so I've had two Sasquatch come back in my life, being one of which I've spoke with since 2009, and they just popped in all of a sudden, and all of a sudden they're back. And I'm not the only one that's experiencing them, because I talk to people on the phone or on Skype, and it's, well, let's just say the volume is being turned up. I will give you another link to get to your chat room here. This is a video of a 14-foot-tall Sasquatch, and that's an estimate. It's not a very good video. They're videoing in a mirror because that's the only way the Sasquatch people would allow them to be videotaped. But you can definitely see the barn in the background. The barn is 9 foot high. It's not a very big barn. And this guy is half again as tall, close to, as the barn. So, and he's right there in the video, so you can see him. And I've seen one in person that is probably close to 12 feet tall. And that's just a guess. That wasn't a very good answer to the question, was it?
Well, you know, you can go where you like, but yeah, trying to stay on point. But like you say, you know, you've got something that's going on for you at the moment. So it's have you been sort of been given the sort of go-to guy status?
In some regards, yes. I'm not the only one. There are other people who are doing the work that I'm doing, and we know about each other, and we talk occasionally. There is a woman in Arizona that I speak with. She's very much in touch with the Sasquatch people. There's also a woman in Tennessee that I speak with. And, of course, they're in touch with people who are very much in touch with other Sasquatch people. And we're all kind of coalescing, so to speak, towards what is coming in the event stream relatively soon.
Are you ready to talk about that?
Well, I don't know if I'm ready to talk about that or not, but if you go easy on me, as I am fragile, I might be able to answer some questions.
Oh, Thomas, you know we love you.
I know it. I'm so lovable.
Yeah, you're cute and cuddly. Yeah, big old hairy thing.
I know, all 6 feet seven, 300 pounds of me.
Yeah. Slim. So, I mean, you've had contact with them. They've told you their stories. You've had other contact. Have you had ET, you know, sort of, what can I say, normal, ET contact, like with, tall Dakotas or anything? Star Elders, that's the fellow.
I have had contact with some, what I call off-worlders. I don't call them aliens.
Mm-hmm.
I call them off-worlders. Because they're not from this world, obviously. The most surprising contact that I had recently, and I had validation on this, and I won't talk about the validation or anything, that's personal, and I'll just keep it to myself. But there is a Sasquatch elder that I had contact with recently, and he is somewhere, I'm guessing between 3 and 4 galaxies away, and he's the planet he lives on. He's about 60 feet tall, 6'0". And the planet he's on is probably about 3 times the size of Jupiter, and so that's why he's so tall, because that's a normal height for their people on that particular planet that he's on. So where do you want to go from there?
Well, it's interesting because I was talking last week in this slot with Will Stillings, and one of the things he was emphasizing is that the 6 foot tall range is not the norm.
No, it's not.
You know, that we're quite unique being this height. Although, you know, as we've seen, there's you know, even smaller, you know, there's little tiny humans, and there's that little, little alien from the Sirius film and all that stuff. Have you seen the Sirius film?
Yes, I have it downloaded on, one of my computers here. I watched it once. I'll probably go ahead and put it on a external hard drive or a thumb drive or something, and just get it off my computer, because I don't know that I'll watch it again. Mm-hmm. And as far as that small alien goes, that's in that film, I don't know what validity there is to that, but it makes sense that he lived to be about 8 years old physically. And you have to understand that at that height, he would probably be the equivalent of a 5 to 6 foot tall human in this density of existence. And so 8 years for him was probably a 70 to 80 year lifetime or more. And we just measure time different, and they probably didn't measure time at all.
Oh, I see. So he may be six of our years old, but he's like a dog or a cat.
Sure.
Yeah, I see. Cat years. Yes. Interesting. Interesting. So we have some response from the chat room.
Okay.
We all love you. He's haven't heard Thomas for a while. What's he up to lately?
I'm up to 6 feet seven, and if I put my hiking boots on, I'm about 6'8", 6'9", somewhere in that range.
Okay, and question from Dolly. How does one make contact with Sasquatch people? Just one-on-one, no media.
It's really rather interesting. If you put your intention out there, usually one of them will answer at some point. The key thing is when you receive a communication to ask lots of questions. Don't dismiss it as imagination, or anything of that nature. Start asking questions and ask for validation. Okay, I hear what you're saying, but, can I please have validation on what you're saying to me? And leave it at that. And then that way, once validation comes through, you'll know. You won't have to believe. You'll know at that point whether they are communicating with you or not. And so even today, 5 years after this all began for me, I still ask for validation. And I get it. I get the validation.
You know, I think that's really important, Bickle. Just one-on-one, no media.
It's really rather interesting. If you put your intention out there, usually one of them will answer at some point. The key thing is when you receive a communication to ask lots of questions. Don't dismiss it as imagination, or anything of that nature. Start asking questions and ask for validation. Okay, I hear what you're saying, but can I please have validation on what you're saying to me? And leave it at that. And then that way, once validation comes through, you'll know. You won't have to believe. You'll know at that point whether they are communicating with you or not. And so even today, 5 years after this all began for me, I still ask for validation. And I get it. I get the validation.
You know, I think that's really important, because you can...
I'm sorry, I don't know why I detailed that, but I did.
Well, you know, that's a very interesting thing, because I think it's absolutely true, Thomas, that people with belief systems prevent reality from happening.
Well, in some fashions, yes, they do. And because we have been through this experiment, if you'd like to call it that, that's basically what it is. There's a lot of people that are keeping this from shifting forward into what we are becoming because of their belief system. And so the planet is trying to hold off and trying to allow everyone to make their choice and get off the belief systems if they choose to. But the law of free will choice is always being observed. And so it's never any more simple than a choice. And so if you choose to believe something, all I would ask is that there make sure there's evidence or experience or both to support your belief. And then at that point, you don't really believe, you know, because you have the evidence and the experience to show how you know. But I digress.
Well, you know, I think it's a really important point because, you know, particularly with what you're trying to deal with, what you've been given seemingly the task to deal with, is a bit like pushing a rock up a hill. You know, it gets harder because you get more tired. And you have the burden of proof. You have to always, you know, give people proof, and otherwise they think you're just making it up, and then you begin to doubt yourself, and then you know, that. So I think it's really, really important to take a very step-by-step and scientific approach to things, even if it's familiar.
Well, experience cannot always be chalked up to scientific evidence. But even then, when you have the experience, I would question that. Is that really what I'm experiencing? Is that really what's happening? And so I'm constantly asking questions of things that go on around me. And some of the things that occur around me, I just, not even a good fiction writer could make up some of the stuff that goes on around me.
Well, maybe you should be a better nonfiction writer. Well, that's presumably what you're going to be doing.
Good luck getting me to sit behind a keyboard and type.
Well, you don't have to do that. You get someone to do the typing, and you just say, look, take these shows, transcribe them, and I'll edit them. That's all you need to do.
If there is a volunteer that's willing to work with me on that, then... you know, I think 80% of the royalties off of book sales is a fair offer. I'll just take 20%. You can have 80%. So if somebody wants to step up, here's the invitation right here, Revolution and Wolf Spirit Radio. Thank you.
Yeah, because Thomas has had lots of experiences which have left him rather debilitated, and one of them, some of these debilitations kind of prevent him from easily doing typing. It would be a great service to the world of the hairy folk and of us humans to increase our understanding of the races that we actually share this planet with, and certainly share galaxies with, and all of that stuff. Yeah, so yeah, we're quite small, really, aren't we?
Yes, and I feel three different minds out there right now listening to the show asking, how do we get in touch with you? Well, you can get in touch with JP through Revolution or World Spirit Radio, and he will put you in touch with me. And it's just as simple as that, and that's as much information as I'm going to give on that. So it's on you, JP.
Thanks, mate. So anyway, yeah, we're currently broadcasting on No Borders Radio and on Wolf Spirit Radio and on Revolution Radio, and all of which are listener supported. Whichever way you're coming in, do help us with the donate button. That you know, even just a few dollars or a few pounds, that will mount up. The more people do that, God, you know, the price of a beer. You know, give us the price of a beer. send Thomas a nice cake. Some biscuits.
Loaded with cannabis.
Medicinal grade, of course.
Because,
it's not for a joke. But, we've got some ground to cover. I'm really interested in the ancient histories, and would you be prepared to, delve into some of those things as you've been taught from the contacts that you've had about our place in the galaxy?
I can speak on some of that, so if I don't know the answer or don't have an answer, I'll be sure and tell you that as well.
I'm sure you will. But, in terms of, in terms of who lives on this planet? That's what I want to know. Who in and where live? Well, because we live on the surface, but there's a huge amount of planet underneath us. Lots of space, lots of real estate, isn't there?
There is, and if you're looking, it depends on what kind of life forms you're talking about. If you're looking for just the humanoid life forms, humanoid types would be in the range of us, of course, and then, of course, the Sasquatch people. And then you have the Saurians, which are the evolution of the dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
And they average somewhere between 7 and 8 feet tall. Very calm, very relaxed, very, very sublime individuals. They don't get excited very often. If they do, you just don't want to be around because there's going to be a whole lot of furniture moving in the place. And that's basically it. There are others that come and go. There are the bird people that come and go. They come and go on their ships, and they stay and do what they need to do, and then they go somewhere else, and they go back and forth all the time. The Draco and Hydra reptilians are basically gone. The only thing that's left on this planet is the hybrids. So they're gone. The Archons are pretty much wrapping up. That's being finished off as we speak. And they're not happy about that. But hey, you know, we're not happy about having to do an extended play on this experiment for another year or so, whatever it is. It's not that much longer. I won't say how much longer it is, but in any case, most of that is being wrapped up, and that's basically all I can speak of. I'm sure there might be others, but I don't know who.
Well, thank you. Well, that's plenty to be going on with. I love the word the Saurians. It's not a scary word. It's kind of, well, okay, yeah, lizardy people. What about amphibians? Are there any people that are like, you know, because lizards and frogs are not the same thing, are they?
No, and there may be some amphibian types that are here. I'm not sure of that. I know they're out there. I know they're around in the solar system right now watching what goes on. The mermaids, what you would call mermaids, the History Channel did a special on them because we have evidence now. And they're actually called Venusians because they're from the planet Venus, which is a water planet. And they go back and forth at faster vibrations, obviously, so they can basically transfer back and forth. But cetacean life on this planet, dolphins, whales, porpoises, that kind of stuff, is their family. And so they come here and interact with them, and the U.S. Navy knows about that. That's why they have the scientists that recorded that bloop and other things in the ocean. That's why they heard the Navy sonar weapon or sound weapon, because they don't want them here, but they can't really control them anymore.
The Bloop.
Yeah, so if you go to YouTube and just put in The Bloop, you'll hear one of the calls of one of their mermaid people talking to one of the dolphins. And it's right there on YouTube.
Isn't it? There was just one instance of this thing going bloop. I mean, it really just went bloop. But was it, you could only hear it go bloop if you slowed it down 1,000 times or something?
Well, the recording that's on YouTube is pretty good. So I'll let you be the judge of that. But I know you have sound software, so you're more than welcome to download it and analyze it for yourself. I know that other people have. And it's one of the mermaid people, or whatever you'd like to call them, Venusians is what they are, communicating with one of the dolphins.
Nice. You know, I discovered today that there is a website that's called believeinmermaids.com. And okay. If you type in believeinmermaids.com, you get a Department of Justice block on it.
Well, isn't that exciting?
Isn't that interesting? Why would they want to stop something like that?
And why are they blocking a website all the way up there where you're at? I didn't think the Department of Justice had anything to do with the United Kingdom, but maybe I'm off.
It's .com, not .co.uk.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
.com. So, you know. But it's interesting, believeinmermaids.com is not available. There's a government block on it. Very odd thing to have, to my sense. So I was looking at that piece about mermaids. There's a lot of discussion about mermaids at the moment.
They scavenged all the videos and all the different languages that it was listed under on YouTube off, and luckily I was able to download that entire episode before they did that. So I've got it here on my computer.
Interesting. You know, it's getting more and more interesting that there's people all around us, above us, below us, beside us in the waters. People everywhere. People, just people. Not monsters, not aliens. I mean, yeah, the odd diamond spider from the Iapetus, but you shouldn't go messing about by digging the stuff up. But, you know, in general, people. Really. You know, it's like, it's not a big kind of big deal. But we're quite small. I think I'd get a complex about that.
Yeah. It's very interesting when you begin to look at all these things that are going on. And as this planet shifts, I'm so glad that Lisa Harrison interviewed Chris Thomas over in Wales, because he pointed out the very, very relevant fact that we have the evidence of how fast things shift on this planet. When a woolly mammoth carcass falls out around the North Pole, they're usually found with the last thing they were eating still in their mouth. That's how fast things froze on this planet, because they were right in the middle of chewing when they froze. And so the last thing they were eating is frozen in their mouth.
I mean, that's not even long enough to look up, see the wave, and gape long enough for the straw to fall out of its mouth as it's chewing.
That's not long enough to say, oh crap, and turn to run. That's how fast things shift on this planet. We have the evidence. So all these people out there that are saying that the shift has happened, or they're already there, and I'm sitting there going, really? The physical body you're in is not, because if it was, you wouldn't be typing on a blog right now, or you wouldn't be talking on Skype. So all I could say is there's a lot of people that want to be there. We haven't got there yet, but we're very close. That I do know.
Are you talking about, you know, before the end of this year?
Quite possibly. And it's been explained to me because I've asked about this a number of times, and I continue to ask about it. Time is as fluid as water. So it's kind of like when you get something in your drink and you're trying to get it out with your finger and the thing keeps moving around. Mm-hmm. And you have to sit there and try a little bit before you get the thing out of the glass of water. Have you ever done that, JP?
I understand the that sensation.
Okay, that's kind of the way this is going. It's dependent upon the event stream, and so the more the powers that were try to assert themselves, the quicker they're speeding everything up, and it's still on course for January of this next year. Everything will be done, and we'll shift at that point. But it may happen sooner because they are really trying their best to assert control, and they're doing a pretty good job of accelerating everything, which is fine with me because I'm ready to go.
So when you say they're trying to accelerate everything, they're trying to accelerate their agenda, but every time they assert their agenda, the results don't turn out exactly right, do they?
No, because how best to phrase this or put vernacular to it. The rules or the way the dynamics work have been changed in this reality, as I'm sure people have noticed. There's a lot more odd things or unusual things happening in everybody's life at this point. You know the term, in for a penny, in for a pound. I'm sure you do.
Oh, yes.
Okay. At this point, that has been changed, in for a penny, in for 10 pounds. So every time they throw a penny in the bucket to try and shift the balance, 10 pounds gets thrown in the other bucket, and the whole balancing has been changed, or the dynamics have been changed. Am I explaining that accurately enough?
I just keep thinking about your Cockney impression.
No, don't get me started. I'm trying to behave tonight.
But so there's an amplification going on.
Yes, volume is being turned up. The planet herself, the soul that was brave enough to incarnate as a planet, she's awake, and she is ready to go back to being who and what she is. She's ready to give birth to her child, so to speak, which will be the new moon, and it's right on course, and she's ready. And so when the shift point is reached, she's not going to hesitate one iota. I mean, she's not going to hesitate at all. It's going to shift. It may take us 3 or 4 minutes to realize everything has shifted once we get over there, but once we realize it, there won't be any more limitation. Won't be any more control, except what we do to ourselves. Did I lose you?
Interesting. Also, they found the mermaid in Israel. But anyway. It's just coming from the other Tom. Yeah, you did lose me. Yep.
All right. One Tom at a time.
One Tom at a time. Too many Toms. Thank you, Tom, but So,
yes.
Yeah. So yeah. So if you could, I'm just trying to get the right angle from this and get the inspiration. No, you're going to have to help me out here, Tom. Obviously, you've got something really important to say, and I shouldn't be talking.
Well, I can hear the questions from people in the chat room when I say my workload has increased exponentially. I'll just say that I was working with the woman in Mississippi. I'm pretty much done with that. Now I'm working with the guy in Ontario, Canada, whose website I gave you to give to everyone. And there are some other people that I won't mention what state or where they're at that I'm working with. A couple of them, I can say, are in Australia. And I have it echoed back to me what I say to them. They physically experience some of the things that I'm saying to them. So what they call the Yowie, the Sasquatch over here in North America, the Yowie, I received communications from them, and there's obviously no way I could know that stuff because I'm not there physically in person, yet the information comes back from the person I'm talking to on Skype, and it's rather shocking, even to me, how accurate it is.
So you feel that you're... this is what I was talking about before, that your sensitivities have increased.
I can say that they have. I've been doing this off and on for 5 years, but it's really taken on an accelerated pace would be one way to describe it or detail it. And it's really fascinating to try and keep up with everything. Like I said, sometimes I have to look at my driver's license to remember what my name is in this reality, at times. It's very interesting. Are there any questions coming from the chat room on what I said? Because someone's typing something.
Yeah, well, hang on. What's he talking about? I don't know what the heck is going on in the Revolution chat room. There's all sorts of weird stuff and everybody spamming each other. So, let's have a look at the Wolf Spirit. What about negative being that call themselves names like Thoth, Azazel, or Satan? Would they be the Archon or something different?
Those are basically constructs. You have to understand that all the beings in this reality that have interacted in this reality are positive and negative at the same time, just as we are. This is what humors me about Christians that call upon Archangel Michael, because the negative side of Archangel Michael is what they would call Lucifer. So depending on who they call for, that aspect of him shows up. He can be negative or positive. And I know a lot of people are going to say all sorts of things about me for saying that, but that's quite all right. I'm used to being called crazy and all sorts of other wonderful things, but commercial.
We'll see you back. Don't go away. And welcome back to Journeys with JP. And tonight I'm with T.H., Thomas Hughes, and we're discussing extraterrestrials, interterrestrials, and other interesting stuff, I hope. I hope everybody's enjoying this. So, Thomas, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Good, good, good. I've got to say, your audio is spot on this evening. It's very, very good. And very good audio setup you got this evening. We were covering lots of different areas and areas of your life that you've been experiencing on, you know, physical and non-physical planes. But I'd like you to talk a little bit now about how can I put this without making it, very obvious. How is everybody doing in terms of the accretions towards the event? Let's put it that way. Accretion events, you know, am I making myself clear?
I recently checked with some of the beings I interact with, just as a reference point as to where we're at, where we were at. Sometimes I run words together, so forgive me for repeating myself. In any case, I checked on the population of the planet, referring to souls and human skin suits. And we're approaching the two-thirds mark on everyone who is ready to come out of this type of life or this way of living. And as we get close to that, that may be the catalyst that shifts everything. And that's why it may happen sooner than January of this next year, because we're rapidly approaching more and more and more and more and more. People are waking up. And also, if you look at the obituary section of major newspapers, February was the last time I looked at one. I looked at, just as a point of reference, I looked at the Houston Chronicle, and just going back a month, there were 33 pages of obituaries of people, and I'm talking about people in their 30s, 40s, and 50s that were passing on from what sounded like or looked like rather unexpected events that were occurring in their life to cause the skin suit they were in to expire. And I didn't get through all the pages. I stopped at 33 because I was tired of looking at it. In any case, I can assure you that that is a much higher number of obituaries in the obituary section than is typically there. Yes, there is a sense of morbidness to me. Usually about once a year, I check the obituaries just to see how big they are. In Houston Chronicle, sometimes the Chicago newspaper or the New York newspaper, but it's much higher, and people can go and look at it. It's something everybody can look at online, and it's evidence. And Chris, again, I refer back to Chris Thomas, and he talked about these kind of things. Souls are making their choice if they don't want to give up this kind of lifestyle of reincarnating into a new physical body. Every time they live a physical life, then obviously they're not going to give this up. And it's okay. There are 12 other planets besides this one that are going through this time as well. And there will be souls from those planets as well going into some other reality somewhere else. Because this sandbox, so to speak, is not for that anymore. Am I making any sense with that?
This same box is not for that anymore.
Sandbox.
The sandbox. Ah. That's why it didn't make any sense. So, this is a sandbox for human souls in the to have the human or so. Yeah, this is the thing. You know, I've been looking around. Have you come across this thing, the transcript of the ET talking to Mary McGonagall, or whatever her name was, in 1957.
No, I have not.
Right. Okay, we'll not talk about that one. Very interesting. I'd recommend it, by the way. I've seen a little bit about the whole thing about containers you know, human bodies, skin suits. What is it that anchors the spirit into the skin suit?
Well, that's something, and everybody can research this online. And this is something that was published recently. There is an energy source in the human heart, a very, very small place in the human heart. There is energy being emitted that scientists cannot determine or figure out what it is or why it's there. But for decades, ever since they started messing with the heart, heart surgery, that sort of thing, they've known to stay away from that area, because if they affected that area of the heart, there would not be life in the body anymore. So a small fragment of the totality of who and what we are is in the skin suit, and the true third eye is right there in your heart, because that's where you are, in the heart of the body. I don't know if I'm making sense of that. Is that a good enough explanation, or should I go on?
Yeah, keep going. That's interesting. So there's an emission that exists in the heart, and they say that the heart is the connection to the soul. So yeah, I'm you know, keep going.
Yes, and you can. You can research this online, and you'll find the articles that have been published on this, where as technology continues to increase or refine itself, they have measured an energy within the heart itself that they cannot explain or understand. And it happens to be in that very place in the heart that doctors have known for decades not to mess with, or life would no longer be in the human skin suit anymore. So, That is just the small fragment or piece of us, of who we are, that is in this skin suit. This experiment was arranged in that fashion so that, so that the experiment could go forward, and essentially no harm would be done to us or to them, because there was quite a bit of chaos going on, so to speak, in the past and other realities or other time frames, however you'd like to look at that. I think that's all I'm going to say about that right now.
Oh, I was just going to ask you to expand on what we were just talking about. What do you mean by those things?
Well, it's going to be somewhat of a shocker for everyone to find out just how accurate a history of where we came from, the things we've already experienced or been through, that the entire Star Wars series is. It's no mistake that George Lucas put Wookiees, Chewbacca, in Star Wars, because Sasquatch people live right here on this planet with us, and that's what the Wookiees are. So, what more can I say about that? Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, the whole thing about a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, it wasn't very far away, was it?
It was, I would say, between 3 and 4 galaxies away, and the war that occurred went on between 4 different galaxies, and it was resolved to do this experiment so that all parties that had disputes or grievances in this conflict could resolve their differences. And those here at the end of this experiment that are not wanting to abide by the agreements or oaths that were taken by both sides in this fashion, they have been removed, and they are in a reality that, well, they can't access this one anymore. Let's put it that way.
So this is also kind of corroborating what Andrew's been talking about intergalactic mafia, he calls them. And the purpose of Earth being to unify, many, many bloodlines. Is that right? You agree with that one?
Essentially, that would be accurate. I found it very interesting that, the movie Marvel's The Avengers came out when it did, because at the end of the movie, if you watch it past the credits, you see an individual called Thanos, T-H-A-N-O-S.
Really?
Yes.
That's not a local name.
Thanos is the individual in that particular story, that he's the one that backed or supported Loki in his conquest of this planet. And so there is some accuracy that can be drawn from that, because there is a being who was wanting to control, much the way the Emperor was in the Star Wars series. And, basically he was given a choice, as all beings are given a choice, do this experiment or go back to source, what Christians call God. Go back to source, be fragmented and reformatted, and you'll be remembered, but that's all you'll be, is a memory. So that's why this experiment is going on, and why it has gone, and why it's being wrapped up and brought to an end at this time, because all parties involved in this experiment know. They don't believe. They don't believe anything. Okay, they don't even have the word for belief. They know that this experiment is over. And as Bob Dean said in his interview with Kerry Cassie last year, if we look at this planet as a trust or a state, the original executors of that trust are back. And they're making everyone abide by the rules. And they certainly have the Goramba to support their position, I can assure you.
The Goramba. Oh, Klingon words, sorry.
would be
Come on. Sorry, I see. Yes, I understand the reference now. So there we are. So the event, I'm going to drill on you. The event. What kind of things can we expect as a precursor to the event? Because it's not going to happen suddenly, is it? There will be signs in the heavens.
Well, we've been seeing signs on this planet since last year that things are being wrapped up. I mean, you see it reflected in plant life. You see it reflected in other life forms around you. I recently posted on YouTube, and you may have seen it, may have not. In February of this year, there was a man who was trying to be a lion tamer. Okay, you know, he got in a circle with a woman, and there were 10 lions in the ring with them. And one of the lions attacked him because it was disagreeing with the way he was treating the lion. In other words, respect is a must. Disrespect is not tolerated. And so he continued to try and assert himself as being in control, and the lion was not having any of that. And so another lion joined in with that one, and all of a sudden he was being mauled by 2 lions. And this is not the only instance of it. It's just the one I happened to put on Facebook. But there's a lot of people who are finding out the hard way that it is much better to go into agreement with another life form than it is to try and assert yourself as a dominant or controlling force in their life.
That's right. That's, exactly.
You know, I was part of Lisa Harrison's countdown to December 21st last year. And one of the people she interviewed before me was George Kavassalis. And he said it very clearly in that interview when and he used the word humans because he doesn't refer to souls and human skin suits like I do. He doesn't use that vernacular. He just calls them humans. Humans have to begin to realize that they are not the only intelligent life form on this planet, and it's a collective, and it's part of the we, and we are part of the we. And so those that think it's all about me have to go somewhere else if they want to continue with that line of thinking. And some of them don't want to give up. It's all about me in this reality, and they're having to give it up the hard way. I'll give you a video to give to the chat room. It's about 3 minutes long. It's with Kevin Richardson, and I tend to admire this man because he works with, he has a pride of 38 lions there in South Africa that he walks around with and sleeps with, and they're his family. And he has no expectation on those lions except for them to be themselves, which puts the ball back in his court to learn just exactly who they are. And so that's a really good video, and you'll see him working with hyenas and leopards and lions. He even has a giraffe on his 1,000-acre preserve there in South Africa near Johannesburg.
Yeah, so it goes back to my experience with the husky. You know, I couldn't dominate him. Well, I'm not a dominating kind of character, but I could establish a conversation, and in the end, yeah, we did. And so, you know, I felt that it was a really positive, positive end to quite a difficult week for me, I have to say. Yeah. So, of course, you know, thanks to all the listeners who called in and gave their advice, and most particularly SJ with his, show him the corner of the biscuit. Show him the corner of the biscuit technique.
Yes.
Yes, and I think that might even extend to other communications as well.
Yeah, my boy Catahoula Charlie, the one that's more Red Wolf than anything else, he's very much of the mindset that he's not going to do it if I don't do it. So when I get them to go outside to do their business, he won't go outside unless I go outside. He's not going to do it if I don't do it. So I have to go out the door first and wait for him to come out, and then I close the door behind him. Yeah, the two have already rushed out, of course, at that point, but, you know, I don't mind. It's just the way it is. I'll go out first, and then he'll follow me. But if I don't do it, he's not going to do it.
So why is that?
Well, obviously, I mean, you know, it would be like somebody coming up to you and say, here, try this, and they hand you something to eat. And you're like, I don't think I want to, not unless I see you eat it first. In other words, you don't trust what they're giving you unless they eat it first, and then you trust it, and then sure, I'll try it, okay. That kind of thing. Am I making sense of that?
You're his food taster. you're his servant.
That's basically one way of looking at it, yes.
I know. But it's always good to get the relationship right, isn't it? To be able to describe it accurately. It's like the relationship that people have with their cats.
Yes.
Yeah.
And a cat is a very persnickety life form, so you really have to pay attention to the body language and the different sounds they make at times. In the case of Kevin Richardson, when you have 450-pound male lions, it's really important to pay attention to what they're saying to you with their body or with their voice.
Mm. and certainly with their minds. Cats are quite bright, aren't they? I would imagine that a lion would be quite an intelligent creature. But is it just entirely service to self?
No.
Is it just pretty? Is it a bimbo?
Well, with lions, it's always about the pride or the family. And so the family comes first. That's why fights are not tolerated generally. Why everybody keeps a fairly calm demeanor. And I'm referring to lions in captivity. Mm. They don't exert themselves to do anything out of the ordinary. They're a collective. They live as a collective. And so the pride is paramount above all things. And so the quickest way to get mauled by a lion, or several lions for that matter, is to do something offensive to one of the lions of the pride, and then you might have half a dozen lions trying to shove an electron microscope up your backside to see why exactly they should let you live.
You mess with my family, you mess with me.
That is basically what it's coming back to in Kavosilis, back to that. Sorry, I deferred a little bit far from that, but he said right in the interview that humans are going to have to come back into synchronization, in other words, and an understanding, an awareness, or a knowledge that we are part of the we, and we don't have to sacrifice anything of the me to be part of the we. In fact, the me gets enhanced or augmented because we're part of the we. And it's simple as that. I don't know any other way to detail that.
To become one.
Yes.
With one mind. Yeah. But still somehow remain yourself.
Well, you're always going to be yourself, but the we is augmented because you are part of the we, and you are augmented because you're part of the we.
Mm-hmm.
See how that dynamic plays back and forth and continues to... You know, Indians over here in North America always knew that, and that's why the Cherokee, which is part of my ancestry in this skin suit that I'm in, always had the saying, lift each other up, because if you assist one another and you lift each other up, you're being of benefit to the entire nation of Cherokee Indians at that point.
You know, this is a feeling that I've always had, and that's why I've kind of shied away from the commercial world, because that's what I saw as, or rather, I saw the opposite of that, and what I felt is what you were just saying. You know, I feel we should lift each other up. And I could never understand why people were so hateful and competitive with each other. Didn't seem to make sense to me when I was younger. Now it makes sense.
No, I'm glad I could provide something that was a benefit to you.
So, what's they saying? Well, Diane Eagle, would that not be the source of the center of group sharing for the animal groups, or do they all move in the same direction of how elephants communicate with each other 100 or more miles away? Oh, I'm just wondering, because I think we're about 4 minutes behind, or Wolf Spirit Radio is about 4 minutes behind our real time.
I see.
Because they go through the No Borders Radio is getting the shortest delay. If you want to be up in real time with us, we're about, No Borders Radio is about 3-4 seconds behind real time. Just saying. Anyway, I'm here with Thomas. This is Journeys with JP. We are on Revolution Radio. Wolf Spirit Radio and No Borders Radio, all of which are listener supported. Please donate with glee and gratitude. We are we're also talking tonight with Thomas Hughes, and we can take calls and take questions if anybody's wanting to know anything from the archive history. Actually, I'd like to talk about Maldek. I'd like you to tell the audience what you know about Maldek.
You know, tomato, I call it Maldok.
All right, well, yeah. It's just, I mean, vowels are, you know, very musical, you know, over the year, yeah.
Like where you park a boat at, a dock, Maldok.
Yeah.
It is the Kuiper's belt or asteroid belt that is outside of Mars. It used to be a planet. That's why the entire asteroid belt follows the orbital path of a planet, because it used to be a planet. It was the home world in this solar system of the Sasquatch people before they migrated here, because the planet was obviously broken apart because of things that were done here. One of the reasons that the experiment was set up here the way it was in this galaxy. I don't know what else you would like me to say about that.
Well, were there humans on Maldok?
There were humans on Maldok, but typically they stayed here or on Mars. There are pyramids all over this planet, obviously. There are pyramids all over Mars, and you can go online again and see photographs of that, taken by NASA and other satellite arrays that have taken pictures of that. And there were pyramids all over Maldok. And so what we would do, the way it worked, is that whatever side of the planet was facing the planet you wanted to go to, be it Mars or Maldok, you would sight to sight from a pyramid in your area to a pyramid that was facing that planet at that time. And then you would sight to sight from that pyramid to Maldok or Mars. And that's the way we used to roll with it at that point in time. Of course, things changed, but what else would you like to know about that?
That's very interesting. I like the, because I'm thinking, okay, well, that's like train timetables, isn't it? You know, there would be a timetable that, in this period of time, Earth would be there. And, how large was the window? I mean, was it just a 1 minute thing? How many people?
No, the window was usually between 17 and 34 seconds. You would go into a pyramid. The pyramid would focus the energy of the planet itself. Mm-hmm. So that you could go from the pyramid where you were at to another pyramid on the other side of the planet if you wanted to do that. Or if you wanted to go to a pyramid on Maldok or Mars, you would go in there and focus on being on Maldok. Earth herself, Terra, I just call her Terry, she would communicate with Maldok, and they would synchronize with each other, and all of a sudden you would be in a pyramid on Maldok, interacting with the Hairy folks, which was their home world in this solar system at that time.
Mm-hmm. And like you say, there are sort of sub pyramids all over the planet to travel to different parts.
Yes. Yeah. And look at how many pyramids there are in South America. Mm-hmm. And Central America as well. And then there are pyramids right here in North America. Of course, the powers that were have done an excellent job of hiding or covering those up. And then, of course, there are pyramids all over that side of the world where you're at. it's very interesting. The woman in Mississippi that I worked with, she asked one of the Sasquatch that I was assisting her with, where we were going tonight. And his response was, and I heard his response in my own head, he said, "We're going to the pyramid in Bosnia." And immediately she said to me, "Thomas, is there a pyramid in Bosnia?" And I said, "Yes, there is." She said, "Where's Bosnia?" And I said, "It's about two shakes of a squirrel's tail from Russia." Mm-hmm. And she, I had her look it up on her computer. She didn't even know. She didn't even know there was a country called Bosnia, let alone that there was a pyramid there. And yet the Sasquatch that we, that I'm assisting her with said, "That's where we're going that night." And so we did.
Wow. Cause, we've had a few, actually I've conducted a couple of interviews, one with, Stuart, I produced the interview with, Stuart Swerdlow and Dr. Osmanagic, the sort of, the guy who kind of one day looked at the thing and said, "Ah, that looks like a pyramid, yeah?" Yeah. And, he's very good, lovely man. And, also, a good friend of mine here from Forest, who's actually the manager of the Indian restaurant. I've had him on the radio because he's been over to the pyramid in Bosnia and did some of the excavations and has been talking about the cover-ups and all the intrigue that has been going on there. So, yeah, absolutely, there is a pyramid, and there are pyramids everywhere, yes. The question from Free Sovereign is, does that imply that a Death Star has been used to destroy Maldok? Maldok?
No, that's not the case. There was a constructed asteroid or comet that was sizable enough to cause all sorts of gravitational disruptions. That's why for a long time, and that's not the case anymore, but a long time, Mars did not have an atmosphere. It does now, and it has for quite some time. It's not a very nice atmosphere, but it is. It's there. That's why the continents on this planet became continents, because it used to just be one continent called Pangaea. And of course, with the gravitational flux that occurred, that's why the continents began separating or breaking apart because of that comet. And the proximity of the comet to Maldok is why the planet essentially broke apart. And it didn't happen overnight. It was somewhere between 2 and 3 weeks before the thing completely broke apart. So everybody on the planet was able to leave, and get off there. Off that planet. They either came here, they went to Mars, and at some point they left Mars and came here because Mars was basically uninhabitable unless you wanted to live under the surface of Mars. So, I don't know what else to say about that, and if there's any other questions they'd like to ask, I'll be happy to try and answer them.
Mm. So, well, it's interesting, you know, this, because the idea that, you know, the planet was exploding, and they had just enough time to da 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 da. I just think of Kal-El. I just think of Superman.
Well, and it didn't happen quite that fast. Like I said, it was somewhere between 2 and 3 weeks before the entire planet began to really break apart, and it took somewhere in the neighborhood of, if you want to use time as an equation in this, it's somewhere between. 40 and 50 years for the thing to break apart and separate out and become the asteroid belt that we see now in telescopes or on radar. And so it wasn't Hollywood movie special effects or anything like that. We knew these things were going on when they went on, and we responded to them or acted accordingly as best we could. This planet was mainly a water planet, except for the continent of Pangaea, and all the continents began to drift or separate, and the planet grew or expanded to some degree during that time. What's really interesting about the shift that is about to occur here is that the planet itself is going to be somewhere between 25 and 33% larger than it is right now.
Ah.
The shift occurs.
That's very interesting. Anybody who doesn't believe that should have a look at Expanding Earth Theory on YouTube. Just type in Expanding Earth. It's a very popular, I've totally prescribed to this. It's very easy to imagine it. If you take a balloon and dip it into paint, or blow it up a little bit and dip it into paint and then let it dry and then blow up some more, the paint will crack, and split along various seams and the balloon will expand. And that's exactly what the planet looks like. And this guy who was a cartoonist, for DC Comics, I think, he animated the depths, the age. He got the soundings from Navy, soundings over, the different parts of the ocean. And, the Navy had aged it and they discovered that the newest was over out by the ridges and the oldest was out by the coasts. Yeah, surprise, surprise. So, by taking slices back out, going back 10 million years at a time, you basically, you shrink the planet back and, they all, kind of come together exactly. You know, that's why Africa and America, South America look like they fit together, because they do.
Yes.
On a smaller planet. So, yes. Expanding planets. And 25%.
That, between that and 33%, it's going to expand to that size. And none of us will really even be aware of it, because when the shift takes place, the way it's been explained to me is that it will happen so fast, faster than I can imagine. Of course, I asked questions on that. I said, okay, I understand that vernacular. But that doesn't give me a reference as to, it doesn't give me a time frame. And I was told, can you imagine 0.2 seconds? And I said, no. Well, then it's faster than you can imagine, isn't it? I said, okay, I'm going back to drinking coffee now. So about 0.2 seconds in this construct called time is how long it's going to take. Now, there's a direct reflection to what I'm saying from the Aborigines in Australia that Lisa Harrison has talked with, and they talk about the dream time, where one night we will go to sleep, and when we wake up in the morning, we will wake up somewhere else. So that's a direct reflection, of course, using different language or words, but essentially it's the same thing they're saying that I'm saying, and that's the information that came from me back when BP had that incident in the Gulf of Mexico. So that's what was conveyed to me by one of the Sasquatch people, and of course I validated that as well. And when I got around 20 forms of validation, I quit looking for it, and guess what? The validation on that particular point keeps coming in. So all of the stuff's starting to line up. I don't know any other way to detail or describe that.
Oh, I wish you could. So, you know, because forearmed is forewarned, and forewarned is forearmed, and four eyes is wearing glasses and all that stuff.
Sure.
But, you know, we like to give the people a chance to get everything in the right order.
I wonder if anything like that is going to matter.
Hmm.
I mean, I'm sure it makes people feel better to think that they're ready for this, but I think they would probably put it more best when he was talking to the people in the Pentagon about what it was going to be like when everything shifted. His description was, well, if you can imagine trying to drink water from a fire hose, that's what it's going to be like.
Intense.
Yeah. People just, they have a hard time imagining this. And not to insult anyone or to belittle them or anything, it's not what I'm trying to do, but I mean, when you ask people to detail their imagination of what it would be like to not have to pay taxes, not have to get up and go to work every day, not have to worry about whether they're going to get a paycheck or not because the company's going broke or if their job's going to be there tomorrow. I mean, can they detail that? And, you know, more than 9 times out of 10, they simply can't. So when I say people can't imagine it, I'm not saying that to insult anyone. I'm just saying they really can't imagine what it's going to be like.
It's because it's outside of their normal experience.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, it would be like if you could talk to a parakeet, if in English, in spoken language, if you could talk to a parakeet and ask that parakeet to detail for you what the world's like outside the cage, they could probably sum it up in about 2 or 3 sentences because all they know is the cage.
So that doesn't really matter.
Exactly. We've been in a cage so long, how can we even imagine what it's like? That's the point I'm trying to make, just to clarify myself. So any expectation you put on this is probably going to leave you disappointed or not manifest at all. Or if it does manifest, it may not be the type of expectation you really want to happen. So keep your expectations out of it. As the Sasquatch people say to me, get out of your head and into your heart. Feel it. Go with how it feels. Don't think about it because that puts you back in your head. Simply go with what you feel and ask for validation on that too.
Hmm.
Did I stump you?
No, I think that's some good advice, that is.
No, I just want to say Chief Gray Eagle of the Yankston Sioux is probably one of my favorite people to listen to speak to because he was kicked out of a boarding school when he was 14 years old. The reason he was, and I love telling the story, so just bear with me. The reason he was kicked out of boarding school is because the town where the boarding school was at, there in South Dakota, had a town meeting, and the mayor called the meeting to order, and before they started the official minutes of the meeting, he asked if there was anybody in the audience or in the staff that would care to say anything. And there's one right there. In any case, he stood up, and the mayor recognized him, and he said, I would like to submit for all the Christians and all the boarding school faculty to simply leave. And the mayor looked at him kind of puzzled, and he said, okay, can you detail for us why you're making that submission? And he said, because they are the most confused people on the entire planet. He said, and I'll give you examples of how confused they are. He said, they bring us to the boarding school, and they cut our hair, And yet they pray to a man who has long hair. He said, and then they make us wear clothes for their school, and they will not let us wear our traditional clothing. And yet they worship a man who is dressed in a bedsheet. Then the other thing, another example of how confused these people are, they teach us to turn the other cheek, and yet they are the ones that are doing the hitting. So do we turn the other cheek or not? And they kicked him out of boarding school the next day. How'd you like that story?
That's my kind of man. This I love the stories of the conversations that the Red Nations had with the missionaries. You know, it's like, so right, I'm going to go to hell if I don't believe in your God. Yeah, so why did you tell me? So.
Yeah, there was a chief of a tribe in Cuba. I can't remember his name right off the top of my head, but maybe TK can remember, or maybe she knows. You know who I'm referring to when I say TK, so we'll just leave it TK. I hope she doesn't mind if I call her TK, because I know she's listening. Anyway, this chief, when the Spaniards came to Cuba, they, of course, tortured him, and they cut off his left hand. And they were trying to force him to adopt the Christian religion. You can see how that's relevant or how that would work.
Yeah, that really works for me. Yeah.
Exactly. So he asked them, he said, if I accept your God and your Christian religion, does that mean that I will go to heaven? And they said, of course. And he asked them at that point, he said, and will you be in heaven as well? And they said, yes. And he looked at them and he said, then I do not accept your God or your religion, and I would rather go to hell, because I would rather be any place where you are not. And of course, I killed him for that, but that was his response to the Spaniards when they were trying to get him to accept or adopt the Christian religion.
And, of course, we now know that it's not about the religion. It's about the control.
Exactly.
It's about destroying your story. And I think that's we have to be very cognizant of that, because we need to know the true stories, the real stories. That's why I'm always drilling all my guests. What do you know about galactic history? Everybody's got a little piece of the puzzle, you know.
Yes.
Star Wars is a big piece of the puzzle.
It really is.
It's not just a silly sci-fi film with some cool special effects and weird robots. And actually, there's a lot of good stuff in it.
Yes. And it was played up that way, or dressed up that way, to attract people's attention, but once that's done, once people really watch it and bring it into their consciousness, it's in their consciousness, and there's no getting away or escaping from it at that point. It's going to keep hitting you in the face until you finally figure it out.
So, Thomas, do you have a website?
No, I do not.
Why not?
Again, my hands don't work as well as everyone else's, and so I have a difficult time. And
so you need somebody to help you with a website?
If they want to, but I'm not going to press for that.
But it would be nice.
It would be nice.
Let's put wouldn't it be nice if Thomas had somebody who could help him create a website and assemble the large amount of information and data that you have?
I promise, as I'm on the air right now, and JP is a witness, and everybody listening is a witness, I promise that I will not act like Will Smith's character in Men in Black 3 and look down at the person in charge and say, I put my pants on.
Maybe you'll keep them on as well. Peter from the chat room saying, Peter Damien, I love Thomas so much. This is the first time I've heard him in months. Happy to hear him. There we go.
I was glad to come on. I'm glad you asked me to come on. And may I just say that I have done a remarkable job, and I'm astonished even myself for behaving so well.
You've actually done 100%. Now is the time. The event has to happen soon. When Thomas hits 100%.
Oh, I have one stupid joke to share. It's very clean.
Okay, as long as it's not there's no cussing involved because we're on there.
No, that's
as long as it's FCC friendly, we'll fine.
Now,
all right,
now,
everybody, now, ladies and gentlemen, Thomas Hughes, the joke.
Okay, what do you call a cow that produces no milk?
Gone.
I'll give a moment for people in chat if they want to take a crack at that. What do you call a cow that does not produce milk? Is there any answers coming forth?
Oh, there's a 4-minute delay. You'll never see it.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Well,
We've had quite a long period of suspense so far. So,
okay.
Hang on a second. Oh. What kind of cow does not make milk?
A milk tut.